This is fun! The FU Network!
Attention! Later, I'll tell you the simple rules for joining the Secret Squadron. To help carry on our important work, I want you to join the Secret Squadron.
I'm Stephen Kersner, and today on the Kersner Expedition, award-winning broadcaster Charles Adler on political cults and the future of the Conservative Party of Canada.
I honestly do not know what to tell you about Peter MacKay, but the Peter MacKay that I used to talk to is nothing like whatever is coming across in this campaign, which is, you know, somewhat not ready for prime time.
Welcome to the Kersner Expedition. I'm the eponymous host, Stephen Kersner. And today I am talking to Charles Adler, the legendary Canadian broadcaster. We spoke once before. It was a very well-received podcast. And I'll tell you that one of the reasons I really enjoy talking to Charles is because it reminds me of a time not that long ago in Canada when people who didn't necessarily agree on everything politically could still have a very civil, at times jovial conversation with the understanding that each had the best interests of, in this case, Canada at heart, but different ideas of what those best interests are or how to get there. So that's very refreshing, and I think...
No problem. By the way, Steve, it just occurs to me that in general in life, if you're getting together with people who simply agree with you on everything, it's really hard staying awake. I mean, you can get together for coffee and you just keep ordering more coffee. So I do not understand how in media some people... I do not understand why people actually want to listen to two people just kind of agreeing with each other, to, you know, listening to two members of the choir, you know, singing the same tune for 20 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour. I think it's probably one of the things that's resulted in the dumbing down of culture, because if you're not listening to any disagreement at all, you're not doing very much thinking.
Well, you're not doing any thinking, and you're not being exposed to thinking that is different than the thinking that you walked in with. You know, people tend to have certain preconceived notions. And if you only want to show up because you're looking for bias confirmation, well, there's plenty of places you can find that on the internet, but I don't exactly know how that makes you grow. And, you know, reading or talking to other people with different opinions, you don't necessarily walk away agreeing with them, but you might understand where they're coming from. And it might alter somewhat your perspectives or your approach to a solution. It won't necessarily change your political bent, but you may better understand, and quite frankly, the way our political system works, especially in Canada, is through compromise. It works best through compromise, designed to work through compromise, and compromises can't be reached when you only want to hear your side and you don't want to hear the other side. And boy, tell me of an idea, a business, anything that's ever grown to any stature where people just blindly obeyed. I mean, I remember working briefly on a TV show, trying to help a friend save his show, and the big mantra there was, we don't want yes men here. We don't want yes men. And it became very clear what they meant was they didn't even want you to open your mouth to say yes. They, you know, just shut up and do what you were told. So your point is very well taken. And I agree. It's contributed to the dumbing down of society. I like to call it the iPod effect, Charles, which is that,
yeah.
You know, I think I might've mentioned this to you once before. In the past, when you and I were growing up, if we wanted to hear a certain song on the radio, we had to choose the radio station that would have the song. We'd have to sit through listening to songs we liked, songs we were okay with, songs we hated. We had to listen to inane banter between DJs, even more inane radio commercials, and eventually we got to the song we wanted. And that told us that we were part of a greater world, and in order to get to what we wanted and what pleased us, we had to recognize that there were other people out there who had different things that pleased them, And it was all part of understanding that you don't live in a silo like people do now, where they can curate exactly what it started with music, you know, exactly only what they want to hear, which means that they never have a chance to expose themselves to music that they might not otherwise have listened to or even discovered. And then it moved to news. And so people can just bookmark certain websites that just confirm their bias and never challenge them to think. And it's, you know, people are just living in a silo, and they do truly, I think they do truly get offended when you invade their plastic bubble with opinions that don't match their opinions. I don't think it's mock offense. I think people are like, how dare you? You've just invaded my world. You've just invaded the world I've created for myself. And I blame it all on technology, Charles.
Well, I just didn't know. It's wonderful. When people are having conversations, I notice this a lot. People preface everything they're going to say if they think there's any kind of possible disagreement. So people will, you hear this a lot in today's dialogue. Look, I don't mean to offend you, but look, I know that, you know, what I say is going to, just say it. Just spit it out, schmuck.
Tell me
what you want to say.
Because you know what, that falls under the, you know, no offense, but you know what comes next is going to be offensive. Like, you know, so I know what I'm going to say might offend you. You know it's going to offend. So just do me a favor and stop insulting my intelligence and at least say something that if you give me an honest opinion that I don't agree with, but you address it respectfully and to your legitimate, sincere opinion, I don't know why I necessarily am going to be offended that somebody doesn't think exactly the same way as I do. My God, I would hate to live in a world where everybody thought like me, because then what makes me unique? What makes me special? What makes me if everybody else is me?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the O word earlier, obedience, you know, this idea of people just obeying what everyone else is. You know, obedience is for a cult. I mean, it's for fundamentalist religion, I guess. It's, you know, if you're a member of a terrorist organization, I understand, you know, you're leading and I'm following and you're telling me what to do, and it'd be ridiculous for me to, you know, violate the code or disagree with anything, because if I do that, you're going to send one of your people to murder me. But that's the tacit agreement that you're in when you're in an authoritarian state or an authoritarian organization. Presumably, in the free world, we're free to disagree, because that simply means we're free to think for ourselves. I know that in some systems that's really risky, but this isn't Iran. This is Canada. So let's just agree to disagree.
You know, that last term you said, agree to disagree, it seems to be something that, you know, at this point in time, you can visit in a museum. Because no, people will not agree to disagree. You must agree with them, because there's nothing people hate, nothing human beings hate at a core level more than being told they're wrong, because it creates a certain sense of self-doubt. I think that's at the basis of a lot of religious disputes. Is that, you know, you can say, well, you know, I respect your religion and I have mine, but at the core of it, if your religion is not the same as mine, it could be taken as, well, you're telling me that my religion isn't right. You know, like, there's just this innate, I think, subconscious thing. People don't like to be considered wrong in any way, shape, or form. And the cult-like behavior you were discussing is not any more limited to religious cults, because we've got political behavior, political wings, which mimic in every way, shape, and form that kind of cult of personality and that kind of cult thinking. And I think that's what's been destroying valid political discourse and progress in Canada. And when I say progress, I'm not necessarily referring to progressive politics. I'm referring to progress as a nation. You know, moving in the same direction. We've got on both sides of the border and on both sides of the political divide, we have people who have an orthodoxy and enforce that orthodoxy. I mean, I'm you lean conservative, I lean liberal. but I will be the first to tell you that I am sick to death of people on the left who consider people who are moderates and reasonable the a bigger enemy than people on the right, and the purity test that they put you through, that if you in any way, shape, or form disagree with the orthodoxy, you are actually not a real liberal. You're not really with us. What are you, a conservative? It reminds me of the time I was a conservative, had been a candidate in Ontario, and after Mike Harris was elected, I was president of the Riding Association, went to a meeting, and I'd knocked on thousands of doors with these people, considered them my friends, and I said, you know, I'm not really happy with the strategy of going after single mothers and the most vulnerable. And people turned on me immediately, calling me comrade and things like that, because I violated some groupthink code. And I thought that was unique to that situation, or at least rare. But nowadays, not only, on the left, especially, the purity tests are ridiculous because, I told the story before, but my grandparents, may they rest in peace, Polish immigrants, farmers, came to this country, opened the first, in Toronto, the first kosher butcher shop. And of course, they sold chickens. And people would come in and they'd ask to see the chicken, and they'd lift the chicken and they'd look at it in every way, shape, and form, and in every light. And I remember my grandmother, may she rest in peace, would say, "Could you pass such a test?" And that's really what's happening on the left and why the left is eating itself. And on the right, you've got people, I'm not on right-wing message boards and stuff, but the term traitor being applied to anybody who doesn't toe the line, the notion that our prime minister is a traitor because he disagrees with the things that some conservative people agree with, I mean, that term really, really should be reserved for actual, traitorous activities, not activities which don't, conform to your political beliefs.
Well, I don't disagree with anything that you're saying there. Look, when people are intimidated into blind obedience in a free country, they're free to just leave the system. So I really think that one of the tragic events that's happened over the years is many good people, many good thinking people with, solid ethics and all the other things that we consider good in human beings, simply don't want to participate in the system because they either find it offensive to the idea of free thought, they find it boring to just listen to a bunch of people impersonate each other and say the same thing over and over and over again. And to me, if you're getting under people's nerves to the point where you're insulting their intelligence or you're boring the hell out of them, I don't really think you're doing the job. But I guess it works for some people. There are some people who, make a business out of running their organizations like cults. I mean, it always amazes me how many people, who have absolute freedom to do what they want with their money, get the credit card out or the bank card out or cash, mm-hmm. and send money to people who are ordering them what to think and how to think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was the late philosopher Bertrand Russell who said, I think I'll get this quote correct. People would rather die than think, and they do. And thinking is difficult. And, to be fair to people, in this day and age where information moves so fast and it's very difficult to determine the veracity and reliability of news, and most people only have time to glimpse headlines, and headlines are often, almost always, written by a different person than the person who wrote the article and are often misleading as to the content of the article, the stuff embeds subconsciously in people's minds. And I understand people being confused and saying, you know what? The hell with all of it. I don't want to be part of it. And also to add to your list as to why some people withdraw, think good thinking people withdraw, is they don't want to be attacked. They don't want to be attacked for asking questions. They don't want to be attacked for expressing an opinion. And on social media, attack is saying somebody is being attacked is not hyperbole. It people pile on and say horrible things. Women get rape threats all the time. My wife gets them all the time for having an opinion. Men don't get that. Men get guys just insulting the size of their penis, which anytime someone is doing that, I'm thinking, exactly what are you afraid of in your pants? But people are being beaten down for having questions. And I think there's good people out there who, you know, social mores are changing so fast. I can't remember a time in my lifetime, other than the change in attitude towards drinking and driving. It went from songs that say, you know, have a drink, have a drive, go out and see what you can find, to, you know, drinking and driving being exactly what it is, which is a very dangerous and reckless thing to do. When I was just got my license, it was still de rigueur to say, oh no, but when I drink, I pay more attention when I'm driving. It's like, it doesn't matter. Your reaction time is impaired. That changed very quickly. But other than that, in my lifetime, I've not seen the rapid pace of social change that we've experienced. And I think a lot of people don't know what this week's secret handshake code word is for certain orientations or political thoughts or whatever. They're people of goodwill, but they're just sick and tired of being labeled as racists and phobes of various kinds simply because they didn't get the memo.
The other problem is, and it really is a problem, in the culture that we live in, people are not as connected to their communities as they once were. Okay, so they're just disconnected. They're not connected to a religious organization. They're not connected to a community club or in any way, shape, or form. They're often living alone. They're outside of relationships. Here's the problem with that. When you're so lonely, you don't even know you're lonely, but you're lonely for a long period of time. You're very vulnerable to getting sucked into one of these political clubs, whether it's on Twitter, Facebook, it really doesn't matter. And you very, very quickly learn that the easiest way to get approval from all of these so-called new friends of yours, these virtual friends, is to just say what they say. And the easiest way to be disapproved of is to disagree with anything they say. So, I mean, this is, you know, this is how you end up breeding human beings who basically behave like sheep. And, of course, there are the other people who are a little more confident in their roles in the world and perhaps have some healthy relationships and may not be as lonely. They look at this and they go, I don't want any part of this. This is Loserville. And often it doesn't really matter whether it's left or right. I'm often in my mind, you know, looking at these conversations where two people aren't really disagreeing with anything or they're actually almost afraid to disagree with each other. And, you know, the word that just jumps out on the screen of my brain is losers. And do you want to be part of an organization where you actually do perceive either the leadership or the leadership and the followers as a bunch of losers? And I just think that in a society that works better, when we listen to each other and have a tacit agreement to disagree in a reasonable way, if we don't have those conditions, then we'll just have more of what we're talking about, just a whole bunch of cultish behavior. It doesn't matter to me whether, you know, the cultish group is right-wing or left-wing or in the middle. A cult is a cult, and a cult is something as a journalist I used to cover, but it was not something I wanted to join.
No, I mean, it was people wearing a certain kind of tennis shoes, waiting for a spaceship at the end of Halley's Comet. Now it's, and you know, you talked about people who are, you know, technology, which had the power to bring us closer together, has actually put us further apart. Meetings that I used to go to, which always would be face-to-face, are now done, you know, on the internet. And there's that human dynamic of interaction and chemistry that used to, it's gone. I have a friend who applies for jobs and it's online, where a screen appears with a question. You have a certain amount of time to read the question. Then the question disappears. You have to use your webcam and answer the question in a certain prescribed period of time. Then the screen comes down with another question. How can somebody in HR get a sense of a person that way? Technology has distanced us, and human beings are tribal individuals. We always seek community. So if you go online, if you feel disenfranchised and aggrieved and alone, you will go online and you will find other people who feel the same way for the same reasons. And you people seek out communities. And the last thing they want to be is ostracized, you know, and I understand. I mean, this goes to the core of who we are as human social animals. And I think what you're saying, and I agree with it, is we need to get back to a society where disagreements are seen as valuable as opposed to on guard, you know, as opposed to smacking somebody in the cheek with a glove and having pistols at dawn. We need to elevate the public perception of the value and the essential value to a democracy of people having different opinions and sharing them and not always agreeing, but having the respect to listen to somebody so that they'll have the respect to listen to you. You don't have to agree. But you know what? I like to know what the other side is thinking all the time, because sometimes I could be wrong. And also, it gives me the opportunity to know what's being said and to have arguments to counter it.
So with all due respect, Steve, what are we talking about today?
I think we've been talking so far about society. And what I want to talk about is what's been happening in the conservative leadership race. Because it's interesting. I mean, you and I, when we last talked, you said you could no longer support the Andrew Scheer version of the Conservative Party. We don't need to go into what that is. I think people know what that was. It's not the Progressive Conservative Party of the past, you know, which successfully was a leader in helping to dismantle apartheid in South Africa. It's a completely different animal that acts often like an animal. So we've now got different candidates coming forward to take the chalice as the conservative leader. And I really believed Peter McKay was a decent guy and a guy who was of his own mind. And then that sort of quickly went away when his yoga comments came out, which were basically just a way of waving his metaphorical penis around and saying that he's more manly, and then blaming his comms team for the tweet, not standing behind it, not taking it down, and then an interview being ended and him not saying, as a leader would, thank you, comms people, you work for me, I'm going to continue this interview. I got very, very disappointed, because I think that a good conservative leader that engages in proper conversation and debate with the liberal leader is good for the country. And now I don't even know what to think. I don't know if the conservatives learned their lesson after losing two elections or if they're about to walk into the saw blades again. There's a lot more people on, you know, the progressive side in the Conservative Party trying to speak up. But you're on that side of the political spectrum. What are you seeing?
I, you know, it's very hard for me because I know Peter McKay, and the Peter McKay that I see on Twitter is a different person. And to me, there's a simple reason for that. He hired someone who isn't as smart as him to do his social media. And guess what? It's not the same guy. I mean, if I actually had met the guy over the years and talked to the guy who I see on social media, I would have stopped talking to him a long time ago, because putting aside all this stuff about the bravado and the, you know, we're warriors and whatever nonsense they're putting out on any given day, that stuff bores me, because I just make the assumption when I hear it that they're trying to approach a really, really fevered, very young, very dogmatic, very ideological audience, you know, having some of the principles that we talked about earlier. We'll just call it cultishness. And as I said, it's one thing to cover a cult when you're a journalist and that's your assignment, but that's not something you want to join. So I honestly do not know what to tell you about Peter McKay, because I haven't talked to him off the air recently, but the Peter McKay that I used to talk to is nothing like whatever is coming across in this campaign, which is, you know, somewhat not ready for prime time.
Well, it's interesting, because I knew Justin Trudeau before he became a liberal leader and before he became prime minister. And that Justin Trudeau that I had conversations with is not the Justin Trudeau who, during his first term, was saying things that wasn't the Justin Trudeau I know, you know, and that was because people were putting words in his mouth. And I think that with both Justin Trudeau and Peter McKay, I want to see leaders who say, thank you for your advice, but I am going to say the things that I believe in the way that I believe them. And it's disturbing to see leaders who, I understand there's political realities. You know, Trudeau was trying to kneecap the NDP support. But I want to see leaders who I can believe are saying the things that they believe and who haven't made a sudden zigzag from who they were before. So, and in the political, you know, in the Conservative Party of Canada now, are you seeing much political conservatism or is it more identity conservatism?
No, it's just the identity stuff, which, as I say, I find just horribly boring. I also think that in social media right now, you know, what we're seeing is we're seeing sort of these guys are campaigning for people to buy memberships and to vote for them. And I think that even if you want to say unconsciously, I think whether it's conscious or unconscious, I think they think that the only people who are going to throw $10 in the pot and want to, you know, have the opportunity to vote are people who may not be the brightest bulbs in the country, maybe the kind of people who, as we've been talking about earlier, are a little more on the cultish side, or a little more on the vulnerable side. And I guess that's who they're speaking to, because they certainly aren't speaking to me. There's nothing that Peter McKay is saying on social media or the others, absolutely nothing that appeals to me. I mean, I can't think of a thing that they've said where I've repeated what they've said to a friend of mine. You know, I mean, I'll play with it a little bit on Twitter, but in my real life and in the real world, I'm not going to quote any of these things because it's nonsense.
Yeah, it's disturbing and it's disappointing. And I think we can't discount the appeal to fear that these kinds of tweets are out there for, because fear works. You know, I forget who it was who said that first give them the disease, then offer the cure. But that's what happens. There's a lot of people out there who for various reasons are afraid and feel abandoned and want someone to champion them. And I think a lot of that, you know, what we're hearing from McKay is trying to appeal to that fear and say, here I am to, you know, Mighty Mouse, here I am to save the day. And not engaging the conservatives like yourself who are thinking conservatives, who understand that there is an actual political philosophy that is conservatism, that the conservatism we've been seeing is conservatism in name only. It really violates so many precepts of what I understood conservatism to be when I was a conservative and since. So do you see any bright lights coming, you know, in the slate of candidates currently announced for leadership of the Conservative Party that are going to recognize that their message was rejected by the country twice, and they need to get more in line with what people think and how people think, and return to a discussion of policy rather than fear mongering and straw manning?
No, I don't see them changing, because you were saying a few moments ago that people don't want to be hectored or piled on social media, and these guys have made themselves such slaves of social media that, you know, if they offered really thoughtful stuff, they'd be accused of being liberal or left-wing or communist or whatever, and a bunch of others would pile on saying the same thing. So I think they're all playing it safe.
They're
playing the Andrew Scheer game. I mean, it's the same thing. It's, you know, I can't, when I see the messaging that's coming out of these camps, I see no difference between it and Andrew Scheer. The only difference is that they've agreed to march in a pride parade. Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you. Welcome in 1983,
whatever. To me, someone saying they'll march in a pride parade is like saying they believe in the law of gravity. Okay, mazel tov.
Yeah, exactly. I hope that somebody rises to the challenge. We've got this young guy, Aaron Seal, who seems to be, who wants to be more progressive, but he's a young guy, and quite frankly, that's not going to happen until he gets a little more seasoning under him.
This is a coronation. I mean, I don't take any of this campaign seriously. They're obviously looking for members. They're looking for members among the same flock that they've had members for the last number of years, and we'll see what they do. Once Peter McKay gets the leadership, but as far as I'm concerned, they could have the count tomorrow and get the same result that they're going to get in June. There's not going to be any great development of issues or great dialogue between now and then. It's just the same message over and over and over again. The central theme, of course, being that Trudeau is driving the country off the cliff, and you must vote for me to save yourself from Trudeau. I mean, this has been the message for, I guess, the last 5 years. It'll continue to be the message. Maybe that'll change once Peter McKay becomes leader. But the question of who will become the leader is really, I can't honestly say the jury's out. The jury's very much in, and people are just, waiting for the real campaign. The real campaign will be McKay versus Trudeau versus Singh.
Okay, who was on the jury, I think, is an interesting question, because there was a lot of big names, some of them who actually announced who their campaign manager was, who then withdrew. It's hard not to feel that there's somebody backstage yanking on their shirts and telling them, no, you don't. Do you think that this is orchestrated? And if so, by who? Or do you think that this is just the party saying, look, we can't have internal bickering because we don't know when the next election is going to be. We have to seem in lockstep behind a leader rather than having a debate which exposes each candidate's potential flaws.
I don't know that it's orchestrated. The only pieces of evidence for that are the fact that Jean Charest was clearly very enthusiastic about getting in, and then he got out. And it was clear that he got out after it was being said that Harper's people would, pile on him. They would bring up stuff that's embarrassing to him, the business about what happened in Quebec, or the accusations of what he was involved in, and all of that other conspiratorial stuff. So he clearly was given the message in public media, and I don't know what he was told privately, but in public media, he was given the message that they were going to really, really dirty him up, and so he walked away from that. But as far as the others and then why they walked away, I don't know. I just know that the overall public messaging seems to be, if your name is not Peter McKay, this is not your year. Kind of like the conversation on the waterfront, the back of the taxi cab when, Marlon Brando is talking to Rod Steiger, and he's reminding Rod Steiger that, there was that night where he could have been a contender, but Rod Steiger on that night told him, this is not your night, kid. This is not your night.
Yeah, and but somebody had to tell them that. And that's, using your years of experience and wisdom and observation, do you really believe that these people decided, these potential candidates decided, other than Charest, which you've explained quite well, I think I should step aside and not run, without there being some intense pressure being brought to bear by somebody or somebodies with a tremendous amount of influence and the ability to convince these people that influence will be brought to bear against them?
Well, it sure seems that way. Like I said, I can't say I know because I don't know, but that's the way it appears. It appears that the other candidates have been told that this is Peter McKay's year, it's his turn, and that's the way it's going to be. I think Peter McKay easily could have won the last time. I think, he didn't run for the very simple reason that he didn't want to be defeated by Trudeau, and he didn't think that anybody was going to beat Trudeau in the first go.
Well, that's how Andrew Scheer was a seat warmer for the more serious candidates who thought Trudeau would, you know, cakewalk into a second term. That's why we're seeing some of the bigger names now starting to come forward and step back. But we see McKay. Do you think that a Peter McKay as leader will put his own people in and therefore be able to be the Peter McKay that you remember and that you spoke to? Or do you think that there is such centralized control that it doesn't even matter what face they put on the Conservative Party? It's very much the same message, the same tactics.
No, I think to talk about the old Conservative Party is, you know, has become a complete waste of time. You know, it means nothing to people who are under 35. And if you're not talking to people under 35, you know, you're just not in business. I don't care whether you're selling smartphones or selling politics. So the nostalgia is kind of interesting, I guess. But at this point, it's irrelevant. Peter McKay will be the leader. He'll be the leader of today's Conservative Party, not the Conservative Party that he grew up in.
And no attempt to bridge the two.
I don't think so. I just think that the people who used to vote for the Conservatives, the ones you and I are thinking about, are voting for the Liberals these days, and they'll continue voting for the Liberals until the Liberals do something that is really bothersome to them. In other words, the obvious example would be budgets. You know, if they blew the budgets to the point where they put the country into inflation or hyperinflation, that's the kind of thing that would make many of those people go away. But at the moment, that seems to be the Conservative policy, that we will become government again when people are tired of Trudeau. So now, the idea that Peter McKay is going to come up with some, you know, magical soup that people are going to want to eat because it's got an incredible flavor that they've never tasted before, I just don't see that. I don't, you know, I see Peter McKay as a, you know, a very competent person, but I've never seen Peter McKay as a guy with incredibly original ideas. I've never heard an original idea from Peter McKay. And I don't think that they're counting on him for that. I think they're counting on him, you said earlier, the face. He's a more attractive face. He's a more articulate speaker. He comes across more credibly than the babysitter, the coat holder, the placeholder, whatever you were calling Andrew Scheer a few moments ago. So it'll be an incremental change. But as far as the base of the party is concerned, Peter McKay is not going to put down the base. He's not going to insult the base. He's not going to tell the base that they've been making a mistake for a number of years. He'll try to do whatever is necessary to ingratiate them. And you can't ingratiate them without bashing Trudeau every 3 minutes. I mean, it's almost that's part of this, you know, church of conservatism.
Well, the thing is that eventually when you bash somebody enough, and all Trudeau's laundry's already come out, you wind up generating sympathy for them for being beat up all the time, and it backfires. But one final question. The thing that's good about a leadership campaign with multiple people contesting it is that it gets your team battle ready. It gets your team their knocks, their bruises. It helps you identify the weak links and the strong keeners and so on. And it gets you ready to actually fight an election. Do you think that a coronation, as it seems we're seeing, is in some ways a detriment to Peter McKay's ability to fight the next election?
No, I think it'll be irrelevant. This will be the most forgettable. Does anyone remember the leadership campaign when Stephen Harper was running against Belinda Stronach? Does anyone remember the campaign when Paul Martin was running against Sheila Copps? I mean, most leadership campaigns are forgettable, and this is simply one of them. I don't think it'll have any material impact on the next general election campaign, and nobody. You won't, I won't, nobody in the next general election campaign when it's McKay versus Trudeau versus Singh, nobody's going to be talking about, well, remember that leadership campaign that turned into a coronation? What do you think about that? I mean, I have a hard time thinking about right now. Right now is when it's happening. If I have a hard time actually focusing on it right now because there's nothing there. I really won't care 2 years from now.
Now, final question. If the Peter McKay we continue to see on social media persists and deviates from the Peter McKay you knew personally, when it comes time to cast a ballot, are you going to have some difficulty?
It'll be easy. If I'm not happy with the current government, if I feel that they really are doing exactly what the conservatives are saying, you know, running the country off the cliff, you know, irresponsible, you know, fiscally, then, you know, I'll definitely consider voting for the conservatives. But if I'm relatively satisfied with what's going on, I'll be like any other voter. I'll just vote for the status quo. But if you're asking the sort of the open question, am I open to voting for the conservatives again the way I used to? Absolutely.
Actually, I was asking if you were open to voting for the liberals, but you answered that question. I want to thank you for your time.
I believe in voting, and I believe in voting. You know, the way I vote, I vote for one of the parties that I feel has a legitimate shot at forming government. So I tend to vote for the liberals or the conservatives, and I have voted for both over the years. I have voted more often for the conservatives than the liberals. But I'm not the last couple of goes. But if Peter McKay, you know, we'll use the right, left, center thing. If Peter McKay, you know, drives closer to the center, I'm absolutely open to voting for him.
All right. Thank you, Charles. Now, where can people find you on social media, online, and on radio?
Yeah, really simple. On social media, you can always direct message me at Charles Adler. I'm on Twitter, at Charles Adler. And for finding out how we do and what we're doing and when we're doing it on the radio, I'm off radio this week, but back in a few days. Simply go to charlesadler.com or Charles Adler Tonight, which is the name of the show, charlesadlertonight.ca, and we're on the Global News Network.
All right. Charles, thank you very much for, again, taking your time and sharing your thoughts. And I've really enjoyed this conversation, as I did the previous one. I hope you did too, and I hope that there will be more in the future.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much. Charles Adler, everybody. And if you enjoyed this conversation and you want to help support keeping these conversations going, you can do so. Become a patron, become a subscriber. Starts at $1 a month. Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/FU Network TV. Or if you want to just give a one-time donation, a one-time boost, because you like what we're doing, then you can do that at PayPal. You can do it through our address, funetworktv@gmail.com. I'm Stephen Kersner at the Kersner Expedition here on FUN, the FU Network's FU Politics channel.
This is FUN, the FU Network.